It might be our most star-studded episode ever when you consider draft picks, a number 2 overall selection and a number 12 pick, both on the Chirp with Darren Millard. And we are going to talk hockey, we're going to talk golf, and we're going to talk Ferraris and a whole bunch more with Jordan Staal and Max Domi next.
Heads up! Oh, how'd that feel, old man? That's a disgrace! That's a disgrace! What a joke!
Boys, I'm Mike today. Just let everyone know, don't say anything stupid.
I'm going to run you. I'm just waiting for my shift.
Love it when we get to chill out in the lounge called the Chirp Podcast with Darren Millard. You can't see it right now, but over on my left, brand new lava lamp. Lava lamp is over there and it is flowing right now, producer Bob. I am feeling this vibe.
I can smell the incense through the screen, by the way.
And I've got my blue light glasses on. Like, everything is working right now. And I want you to know, everything that I'm doing in the lounge has been legal for at least the last 25 years. I'm not even grandfathering anything. It's all been legal for the last 25 years. Don't start thinking that there's some different wackiness going on in the Chirp Lounge. We have two great guests for you today. My buddy Max Domi, who I haven't seen in a while, stops by the Chirp Lounge. He's in Chicago right now, and I think he's headed for a great year. Started the season with Patrick Kane and Andreas Athanasiou on that line. He's got that feistiness back that I love. But one of the cool parts about Max's conversation is going to be cars. And first car, and then some of his dad's cars. Not just penalty minutes, but cars. But we're going to start off with Jordan Staal, a number 2 overall pick when he entered the National Hockey League, won a Stanley Cup with Pittsburgh and Geno and Sid and company, and then moved on. And it's just, I didn't even realize that it was 6 years in Pittsburgh, but he is Mr. Carolina taking over from his brother. There's so much to get into with Jordan. One, he's mid-30s, so he's closer to my age, so we bond over that. But he's one of the top defensive centers in the National Hockey League. I wanted to know from him how many people, different players, could legitimately lead the National Hockey League in goals this year. I have 9. Is it that many? Take it from somebody who's paid to stop the opposition along with scoring some goals. Plus, an amazing present for him for his 1,000th game. It's Jordan Staal. This is a whole bunch of fun.
Think about the league right now and all the talented goal scorers. How many different guys do you think could lead in goal scoring?
That's a good question. There's quite a few. I mean, Ovi just keeps hanging around too, and the guy's impressive.
He's starting to bug me. He's too good. Like, he shouldn't still be doing this.
I have to deal with him every year in our division. He's been bugging me for a long time, and I basically my whole career. But, you can go down the list for a while. I mean, there's a lot of guys that find ways to put it in. I don't know how they do it, but they do, and they're good at it. So I would say, like, you could put a good solid list of 10 guys that could possibly lead the league.
And different, like, Kyle Connor's coming up now.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of that next a generation of guys, and who knows what's going to happen with Matthews. Can he do it again? Mm-hmm. Like 3 years in a row? What's the most do you think he could score 65?
I mean, that would be quite impressive. I don't know. I mean, the numbers he's gotten over this, obviously the start of his short career already, are remarkable. But, I mean, if anyone's cruising that direction, it'd be him. So I'll make sure he doesn't get against us, but I'll do my best. But then that guy finds ways to just, I mean, he's got some great help around him, but I mean, he just literally needs zero time to get a shot off. Like, there's just like no, like, before you know it, it's already going past three to through you or past the goalie, and it's in the net. So it's quite impressive. Very, very tough to stop for sure.
What's the hottest streak you've ever been on? And what did it feel like?
It was nothing like what he's probably feeling. How many put in last year?
60.
Yeah, 60. Yeah, no, nothing like that. I would say, like, my hottest streak got to be like 7-game, 8-game point streak, probably. Maybe a little more than that, but I know. I don't know.
And that's awesome.
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
It felt great. Yeah. I was really, really feeling it. But, yeah, the way they can do those things is pretty cool. Really cool. Fun to watch. Hard to defend.
You've talked about defending a couple of times now. It's almost like you put way more emphasis on that, or you default to that.
Yeah, I might have to default to that because I mean, I usually know I can't outscore those guys, so I'm definitely got to keep an eye on them and hopefully get lucky myself. But, yeah, that's kind of where I've been leaning towards. I've been doing it since I was a little kid, trying to defend my older brothers on the ice, and then kind of morphed into my own little world and here now in the NHL. So, but no, I mean, obviously, I love scoring. I'm trying my best to do it, but those guys are obviously at another level.
You guys ever get a brothers golf game going in the summer or anything?
So
like
actually,
that?
the fellas for my thousandth game got me a trip to Pebble Beach. So yeah, this summer with the brothers. So
really?
When Mark was at the game and he's on the bench, like, hey, thanks, boys. And my younger brother was in the stands. Well, he was pretty pumped too. But so we got all the brothers out in Pebble, and we played Pebble and Spanish and Spyglass, the whole thing. It was a fantastic weekend. Can't say anyone really stole the show on the money wise, but there were some good battles out there. We had some good golf, and so we get together a fair amount and try to get some golf in when we can. And that summer was It was a lot of fun.
How'd you play at Pebble?
That was my best round. So whether it was the few extra beers that really got me going or what, but it was an 81. So I'll take that. Yeah, it was my best round. Other than everything else outside of that was like above. It was close, flirting with 90s and stuff. But I was feeling it there. It was cool. I mean, what an experience and what a course. It was just a lot of fun.
Did you guys get a picture on 18?
Funny thing is, we teed off at like 2, and
we
didn't know. I mean, it was just lined up that way. We played that morning as well at Spanish, so we were rolling into another one, but we didn't know it was going to be a 6-hour round. So a pitcher on 18 in pitch black wouldn't have really done any good, but we finished the round. We were excited about that, but they had like a little light on that tree on 18 that it was up and on, and you know, we were basically putting in the dark, and I think Eric might have birdied it too, actually, but we were probably one of the last groups to really have some decent light to finish the round.
You get home in 2 on 18?
I did not. We were just in front. I was just in front. Eric was maybe off to the right, actually, so he was close. But we were both had some decent looks at birdie. I missed my putt, and he buried it.
How has your training changed from when you were young to now?
I don't know if it's changed. I mean, it has changed a ton. I've flirted with some different stuff here and there. I find if you're as long as you're doing something for sure, like it's gonna help and usually does it. But I think it hasn't changed a whole lot, especially in the last, I would say probably 8 or 9 years. You've kind of done the same thing to get the body ready and kind of don't mess with what's working, so kind of stick with it. So.
You got the kids running around though.
Well, that's a whole nother training session after. Yeah, so you got the workout in the morning at with the brothers out at the lake, and then. You had a couple of kids running in asking for breakfast, and you say, go see your mother, and, you know, they come back after we're just about done and toast, and then you got to chase them around for the rest of the day, and that's a whole new training scenario. But we just maybe just skip the cardio part of the workout, and we'll just go chase the kids.
Talked to Max Domi, and he told me in a conversation that we had off to the side about his amazement at Rod's speeches. And you're smiling already. I don't know whether Rod plans them or whether they come off naturally, but it does sound like there's something special about them.
They are. He's an impressive motivator, which may be quite a bit of a surprise to some people that just maybe know him offhand a little bit. But he gets in front of a room, and he finds little things that honestly throughout his day that kind of trigger certain scenarios, and really he does a great job just tying it all together in regards to basically how to win a hockey game as a team. And he literally gets the hair standing on your arms every time, and it gets the boys going, and he's a very, very impressive motivator in that regard. Of, I mean, he tells you what you want to hear, and that's, you know, you gotta win for the guy beside you, kind of stuff, and really all the stuff that you really grow up playing hockey because you want to basically just win with the guys and work hard for each other. And he brings the best out of everyone in that room, and he's done it ever since he took over.
You guys got something special going on there.
I agree. We got some really good young players. I've seen young players come in and you worry about them a little bit. You know, you poke at them a little bit here and there, you know, to try to get them in the right direction. But, I mean, the young guys we got now, just like, I don't worry about them. They've figured it out, and they've figured it out quickly. And it shows, obviously, with the way our team's
What do you mean by
success.
Figured it out? Like,
they just understand what it takes, or at least they're heading in the right direction, and really how to carry themselves on a day-to-day basis, and really just how to be a pro. And I mean, between, you know, you can go through the lineup, but almost all our young guys have really just taken that to another level, and it's just elevated our team. And then you got Roddy to boot, who's, you know, just demanding that guys just worked their tits off every day, and it just really just brings another level that, you know, has gotten us over that hump and gotten us into playoffs consistently, and really just being the team that we've always wanted to be, you know, for a long time for the Hurricane fans.
Do you feel like you're a legitimate contender?
I mean, yeah, I feel like we're a good enough team to win, so yeah, why not? Yeah, if we're a legitimate contender.
You know, some guys say, if stuff can fall into place, we got a chance. But to me, it looks like you guys, you're right there.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can win. So yes, we are a contender. Will things have to fall into place? Usually, yes. But but yeah, we are a contender, I think, and we're a team that can really pull it off. So you know, things have to work out, and we have to obviously. You know, stay somewhat injury-free and all that fun stuff. But, you know, really, we've got a group of guys in there that are really hungry for a win and really take the Stanley Cup home. So that's what we're going to be shooting for.
How do you do it, like, be an athlete and then be a dad and a husband? How do you balance all of that?
You might have to ask my wife that question. I mean, I don't know how well I'm doing at it, but... It's hard, I think, because the game itself is like anything in life, is what you put in is what you're going to get out, and everyone knows that it's part of, you know, most of the people's jobs, and you know, you have to balance that between, you know, taking your kid to gymnastics and sitting there watching for 2 hours and whatever, and all that stuff that comes along with family and just your time, really. And and making sure that, you know, the wife's not losing your mind. We're on the road all the time and, you know, and all that stuff. And it's hard, and it's part of life, but it's fun. I don't think I wouldn't trade it for anything. I love the game, and I love being a part of a room with the guys. And then I just absolutely love my family and really just showing who I am as a person and the character that I have. I want that to show through for my kids. And I hope they see that not only in my job, but my day to day. And I think that's kind of how I balance it all.
Who's most like you
out of
the kids?
I got two girls and a boy. The boy's just turning 3, so he's got some character now, but I still haven't quite figured him out yet. He's either absolutely running the whole household or so we haven't quite figured him out, but he seems like a piece of work. But I would say right now the oldest is Abigail, and she's kind of similar in a lot of ways, and the way she carries herself and the way she thinks and stuff. And but you know, it's still yet to be seen.
I love some of the videos that you shared with us on social media. Like they pop up, and it just looks like a riot.
Yeah, it's a bit chaotic.
That part is true. I can turn off the video and I'm back to regular life. You're following it up.
Yeah. It's fun though. I'm excited about Henry, and you know, the girls love the game, but I think a lot of times they like just going to the green room and eating food and you know, drinking pop and if you guys know what pop soda, whatever you want to call it. But
I'm pop.
Yeah, you pop yeah. guy? Okay.
Yeah, I'm pop guy.
But I watch Henry in warm-ups and he's sitting in the glass like this, just like like watching. And like, you know, he's at that point he was 2.5 years old, but he's like, I like this. I want to be a part of this. And then, you know, you go home and he's, you know, like most little boys, I mean, you just want to play hockey all day long and hit the ball. And it's just really fun. And I want to play and experience that with them and my girls. And, you know, that's kind of what, also what motivates me right now.
What kind of hockey dad do you think you'll be?
I would assume I would be very similar to my dad, which was, we used to always say, anytime my dad was watching games, he would be standing up in his loner pole. So he would kind of just stand up there and just kind of watch and didn't say much. And I really had to pull out some stuff from him after games. I'm like, how did I play, Dad? He wasn't very hard on us. But, you know, there were a few times where, you know, at any moment he thought maybe we were dogging it or, you know, we were cutting corners. That's when he came down on us. But other than that, it was, you know, as long as he knew that we were out there working hard and giving all we got, he, you know, didn't say much, and I would assume it would be very similar to that.
Can't be brothers, but, and there can't be anybody in your same team. Give me two line mates that you would take, that you would love to play with.
I would say, I mean, right now, obviously McDavid would be fun, but I don't know if I'd be able to keep up with him. But
he's a freak, right?
Yeah, just so fast.
Do you find yourself watching him when you play the couple of times?
The back of his jersey, yeah. Yes, I remember. I see a lot of that actually. He's special. No, he would be cool. Obviously, I always found like I love the give and go guys, like the Patrick Kanes and the, you know, the Marners and stuff like that. That just really just draw people to them and, like, you know, find opening guys and just that part of the game always intrigued me because it, I mean, it's not my style, but I found it's just very hard to do and they make it look so easy. And I love those kind of players. So like, you know, a Marner game would be a kind of a cool scenario for me, I guess.
How long do you think the post-game ceremony and celebration goes? Like a couple more years, you know, you guys gather and you have the great, I don't know who comes up with it every night or whether you pass that off to somebody, but
yeah,
storm surge.
I'm not sure. That, I mean, that obviously came around organically and it was really cool. It was part of a wave of really just, you know, our team finally winning and really turning around and finding a way to make it the playoffs and all those things kind of combined in a long drought. And then, you know, throwing that to boot and the fans obviously embraced it and loved it. And players had we had a lot of fun with it. You know, after a while, it was kind of hard to really think.
Yeah, how do you come up with new ideas?
No, we're sitting in pregame meal. Like, well, what the heck are we going to do tonight? Like, you're just like, and that was when we did it. Like, we were just literally like, and then, you know, after a while, we're like, I don't know if we can do it anymore. We're like, well, like, you know, the people behind the scenes will think of them for you. And then, you know, they tell us some of their ideas. We're like, we can't do that. And like, you know, we're just like, and then we're kind of hemming and hawing about what we can do. And so it turned into a little bit of a distraction and a little bit, just a lot of work. I mean, essentially, and we were kind of getting lazy, to be honest. And we love our fans and we wanted to win the game. And that's what we really have to do most importantly. We can't do the skit without actually winning the game. So obviously we had to focus on that first. And it kind of just, you know, dwindled in like, well, we still love the storm surge. I think it's cool. The clap is really neat and still gets the fans engaged. And, you know, we said maybe every now and then we'll throw in a wrinkle one here and there. But really, honestly, we're not very creative people and we ran out of ideas. It's bottomless.
I'm impressed that somebody gets it to trip for the end of the game because he seems to know all the time.
He's got some in. He's been there for a long time. He's got some ins on some stuff like that. But, yeah, I wouldn't say it ran its course, but it was hard in the end to kind of keep it going.
No wrong answer here, but peanut butter with jam, honey. You're looking at me like strangely
because I like peanut butter with some things.
But peanut butter with jam, honey, or banana?
Banana. I was waiting for a banana. That's kind of what I was looking. There's nothing better than a peanut butter banana sandwich. I grew up on banana sandwiches. I went banana with sugar, banana with like anything on a sandwich, and it's fantastic.
I don't think I've loved anybody more than I love you right
yes?
now.
Yes? Like, are you with me on this?
Banana is awesome.
You're looking at me like, this guy's nuts.
This is outstanding. Okay. I love this. Peanut butter and banana. One superstition or routine that you have on a game day? Do you call it superstition? Are you superstitious?
Like you said, like people would call it a superstition, but you can call it a routine as well. I mean, I have my routine. I do the same warm up, same certain stretch every time.
Has it always been the same?
No, it changes every now and then. And I guess I'm not crazy in the superstitions where like I won't do that anymore. You know, if I have a good night or a bad night, that doesn't really change a ton. You know, I don't eat the exact same things. I don't, you know, so. It'll change over time, so it's not exactly like to a T, but there is definitely a routine, and that's just for your own mental state of just getting ready for the game. You might as well start doing the same things you feel that's going to help you get to the game at the right time. But I put like my right skate on first, my right elbow pad on first, stuff like that that I don't think anything of because that's just how I get dressed. But I guess it's kind of weird, but nothing too crazy.
Yeah, I never thought of that either, but I guess you would. And every time you go on the ice, you turn right. Everybody always turns right. No matter where you skate counterclockwise. I've watched a million practices. Nobody ever goes clockwise when they go on the ice. Tell me if I'm lying.
Yeah, no, you're right.
You ever go clockwise when you go on the ice?
No.
No.
You always kind of go that way. Yeah.
I don't know whoever invented that, but it's
it's all lefties, I guess. They want to shoot the forehand, coming around, shoot forehand again.
This is Mount Rushmore. So four of these. Fast food. Give me your four favorite or best fast food.
Oh, Chick-fil-A. Top. I was just there with Henry the other day, actually. I mean,
what do you get?
You can't. I didn't actually eat it, but I should have. I ate all his chicken nuggets, essentially what happened. But
isn't that the best part about kids? You get.
Yeah, well, eat all their food. Yeah, they don't eat anything because exactly. They're kids. They don't eat. So
for 2 years, I didn't make a meal.
I am for the next 10 years and for the last five, I have been a straight up garbage can for kids' food, and it's fantastic because it's all good stuff. But Chick-fil-A is number one, no question. Is Chipotle considered a fast food?
I'll take it. Yeah.
Okay. Chipotle would be number two.
Go to the panel.
You panel. Take it? Panel okay. Like thumbs
Producer
up.
Producer Bob. Right. Takes it.
All right, and then. Then it gets a little hazy for me. I would say I've been a McDonald's guy my whole life, growing up for sure. Kind of obviously got away from it now, but McDonald's is still a good mix every now and then. Lube up the gears and I don't know what the last one. I wouldn't even go past that. I don't know what else is there.
I was going to say Tim Hortons, Wendy's.
Oh, Tim. Yeah. Oh, I can't believe I forgot. Timmy's for sure.
Timmy's.
That's good four. I would actually put Timmy's before McDonald's, maybe.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What do you get at Timmy's?
Donuts.
What's your coffee?
Coffee, yeah. I'm a black coffee guy. And then, I mean, now I'll just get the Timbits for the kids.
Yeah.
Wink, wink.
Wink, wink, yeah. Because they don't want
it. But no, sour cream glazed donut, top notch. Boston cream, my other two. Those are my two donuts.
How's everybody back home? Thunder Bay.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. My dad's still working the farm, and
that's amazing.
Getting 13-hour days in, and just coming home dirt everywhere, and we're just looking at him like, "What are you doing?" But yeah, he's still loving it, and doing his thing in the summers, and he still has his Florida thing in the winter, so he gets to golf and watch hockey and drink wine all winter anyway. So he loses some weight over the summer, so it's all good. And, the rest of my family, my wife is from Thunder Bay. So literally, I mean, every time we come home, it's a big family affair. It's fantastic. And, I've learned how to cook a good, pizza in the wood fire pizza the last few summers. I've really started to perfect that a little bit. And so we have a bunch of family over all the time. Friday night pizza night is when it all comes down. And, we cook up some pizzas for everyone, and that comes on a weekly basis. So it's just a lot of fun heading back home all the time.
You know, I love talking to the kids. Their future of our game is in such great hands, but it's so cool to talk to somebody who I've kind of can relate to a little
what
bit.
What are you saying?
I'm not saying you're old. I'm saying
you,
that you're experienced.
All right. Yeah, okay.
Experience.
As they would say, a vet. Yeah.
This has been fun. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Best end to an interview ever. Pizza and donuts. Donuts and pizza. I'm going to go over to producer Bob right now. Your favorite kind of donut and your favorite pizza.
My favorite kind of pizza and favorite donut. Okay, I'll start with the donut first. Donut, real simple. Keep it simple. Don't need the jelly. Don't need the bells and whistles. Give me a good old-fashioned glazed donut from Krispy Kreme right off the line, hot with some coffee. I'm in a good place. Favorite pizza? Well, listen, so many options here in New York and in the East Coast and Long Island specifically. It's all about the water, Darren, here in Long Island. You know, the pizza and the bagels are superior. My favorite kind of pizza is just give me a Sicilian slice, corner slice, well done, with a nice thick crust. That would be my favorite pizza. Most overrated pizza is Chicago deep dish, but that's not the question. I'll just leave it at that.
I'm not getting into the debate on pizza, but I'm with you on the Sicilian. That's awesome. The idea of a glazed donut really speaks to how you produce. You just want the basics. They get to it, make sure you're satisfied, but you don't have to dress everything up. That glazed is you as a producer.
Yeah, these donuts with all the sprinkles and again, the accoutrements, not needed. Regular glazed donut, I'm happy.
You're so funny. Before every episode, like, just chill out, be in the zone, and give me the goods. That's a glazed donut. That's a glazed donut. Bob Bender on the Chirp with Darren Millar. So let's get into some of the names, because we started that interview off with how many different players could score the most goals in the National Hockey League this year. We were going around numbers there, but Austin Matthews, Leon Draisaitl, I'll give you the names. Ovi could do it. He was there last year. I'm not going to count him out. Kyle Connor is another great name in this mix. Steven Stamkos was back at it. Kucherov, I think he could really break out. I wanted to go Laine, but I'm not sure with the injury now. Jason Robertson is a name, 42 last year. Kaprizov has also been there. There's a lot of names. And I'll throw one final one. Alex DeBrincat. He was great in Chicago. Now, he had Patrick Kane. A little more competitive. He's been in the mix every year around that top 10. So there's a few names. It all revolves around one guy, though. Not Matthews. Not Stamkos. Not Connor. Not Ovi. It's Connor McDavid. I think he's got it in his head. He's done everything. Now Matthews is getting all the attention. He's going to come back and he's just score. And he did it on opening night with the three. I think there's a statement made by Connor McDavid.
Before we hit the big red record button, I said McDavid is scoring 50. No doubt about it. Lock it in. And let me just say this. Is there any team more unfortunate right now and a team that I'm going to be completely fading all season long? I mean, they're out of the playoff mix already. The Blue Jackets with Laine going down, it really hurts them because they need that scoring to cover up some of the issues that team has. And him going down, I feel really bad for Laine and that team and Blue Jackets fans. I hope I'm wrong, but out for a month, that's tough.
He's a guy that I think will look back at the end and go, he never scored 50. He should have scored 50. But there's been different things to get in the way. This year, again, being out 3 to 4 weeks could get in his way. The Columbus Blue Jackets, one of seven teams that did not win on opening week. Nine teams undefeated. What do a lot of those teams have in common? New head coaches making an impact from Vegas to Dallas, Boston. We've got the beautiful Philadelphia Flyers. The Florida Panthers also having a great week. Rebuild year in Chicago. New coach, Luke Richardson, got to see him last week. I think he's going to do a fabulous job bringing that group along. He's got patience. He's a player's coach, but can lay down the law. I think he's going to be great for people like Max Domi, who joins us on the Chirp with Darren Millard. Max has been through a couple of different teams. I get the sense. He didn't like his Columbus experience under the coach. I think he likes Columbus I love Columbus, love downtown. I think he's happy to be with Luke. And there's an opportunity here to really get back to what he was. And he was a point producer when he came out of junior and has scored 18 goals one year, 28 goals, 17 goals. Like he's been able to put the puck in the net. He's got the eighth highest total on points from his draft class. Think about that. He can still put it up. And we catch up with him after not connecting for a while, talking a little golfing a little bit, as well as what's happening on his line, playing with his idol. Kind of cool. Get to play with your idol. And his dad submarine him on that. It's a Max Domi conversation on the Chirp with Darren Millard. So it's been a while since I've seen you.
It's been a long time.
I think it was at Angus Glen Golf Course.
Probably.
Was one of the last times that we did this. How's your game?
It's all right.
Yeah?
It's coming along.
What are you for a number now?
Oh, I mean, needs a lot of work. I'm like mid-80s still, but like I can get down a little bit, but I can go up a lot on any given day. So we'll see. I just became a member.
Where?
In Toronto.
Where?
St. George's.
Nice.
Yeah, so I kind of have to get good now. So I'll be playing there for the next few years until I become a full member.
Yeah.
And then after that, we'll be ready to go.
Because you're still young, right?
I'm 27. I mean, I'm getting older now, but I guess I'm still young.
How do you feel?
Good. Yeah. Really good. How do you feel?
I did a header off my bike in the spring, and I was out for a while. I feel better now.
You're off the IR now.
Yeah, I was off. I finally... Concussions. Okay, so I finally had one that was serious.
Not fun.
No.
Not fun.
I do apologize to Kipper. Yeah. Like, legitimately apologize to Nick because all the stuff that he went through that I would kind of make fun of him with.
Yeah.
It's
not
real.
Fun. Oh, is it ever?
It's real.
Yeah. Wait for the second one. It's even worse.
I've gone to the Peloton, so
I'm good now.
What kind of player are you now? Because you came in as
a hockey player or a golfer?
Sorry, I should preference that. I bounce all over the place. As a hockey player.
Okay.
Are you the scorer still? Can you get back to that?
I mean, I've never really been a scorer. More of like
you
a playmaker.
But
I'd like to start scoring again. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm going to be playing with Kaner this year, so I think someone's going to have to shoot between the two of us, and I think probably going to be me. let the Hall of Famer make his plays and do his thing. So I'm excited to play with a guy like that and learn from him, or even Jonathan Toews, whoever I'm playing with. But to play with two guys like that is going to be pretty special. So get back to the right way for sure. It's been a tough stretch, a couple years in Columbus. Just going to pretend like it didn't happen, learn from him, and kind of go
from there.
What
do you learn?
I mean, I think there's always a lot of noise, and there's always going to be certain constraints put on you as a player, from above and whatnot. But when it comes down to it, you gotta be yourself, right? And you're in the league for a reason, and you gotta, I mean, keep that swagger, keep that confidence, and don't let anyone else kind of bring you down, and tell you how to play and tell you certain things and kind of do this and that. I mean, obviously, there's going to be certain constraints within each team, and coaches are going to expect you to play this way or this way, but that's why I signed in Chicago. I have a coach that believes in me as a player for who I am. He's not going to try and change me, and I'm just going to go out and do my thing, so I'm looking forward to that.
I thought we saw some of that in Carolina, the swagger,
the disturber. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think that's always going to be there.
I love seeing that again.
Yeah, for sure. It definitely went away for a couple of years just because, we don't need to get into that, but... no, to go to Carolina was a breath of fresh air. It was finally, I enjoyed hockey again. There was a couple of years where I wasn't enjoying it so much. So, Roddy was a guy that he's like, listen, man, you're a really good player. And I mean, we have a really good team. So, I'm going to just put you everywhere, play you everywhere. And, don't take that as any criticism or whatever. But I mean, these guys have done everything I've asked you to. You're just kind of a guy that's here in case we need someone and someone goes down. So, and I appreciated that honesty, and he was a coach that was like, hey, listen, I want to work with you. I think you got a lot of potential here. And when you have a coach like that that's, I mean, winning, arguably the best coach in the league right now, winning Jack Adams and stuff, he tells you that. It goes a long way. And he believed in me for sure and said, just be ready when you get your chance in the playoffs. I mean, we're going to need you. And had a couple opportunities to help the team out, and that was special, really special, something that I won't forget.
He's a beauty.
Like he is
pure
all time
beauty, right?
He is all time. I tell everyone this story. I only was literally in Carolina for like 3 months, so I can't really speak to it too much, but that's all I needed to see. And it's too bad it was too short. But before game like 81 or game 82, whatever it was, we're playing Buffalo, and Buffalo is actually starting to come on. They're playing really good hockey by the end of the year. They got some really good young talent. They're going to be a good team for sure. But at the time, it's like game 81 of the year, like these guys have been first place since like November. These guys are just like, let's get this regular season over with. Let's play a game. And I remember sitting in the room, and Roddy came in, and he gave a speech as if it was, like, the best speech I've ever heard in my life. And, like, you just looked around, and you see guys, like, foaming at the mouth, like, so pumped to play against Buffalo Sabres on a Tuesday night in Carolina. And I was like, wow. Like, I've never seen a coach have the opportunity or have the ability to do that to a locker room of grown men. And I looked around, and I'm like, he's done this every single game I've been here. I was there for 20 regular season games and 14 playoff games, but he didn't miss one when I was there. And I asked all the boys, and like, dude, like he was like that from game one to game 82 and all the way to the playoffs. It's like insane. You're ready to go to war every single night. So I don't think you can ask for much more from a coach like Rod Brind'Amour provides his
players.
What's
he like on the bench when you're playing?
One of the best. Super. I mean, he's like one of the players, right? He wants to win, I mean, just as much or if not more than any of the players, which I think is something that just, I mean, spreads like wildfire in your locker room. But he's very calm and relaxed. He doesn't yell. He's passionate. He'll yell at the refs once in a while. But he really is a spectacular human being, and I feel very fortunate enough to have played for that guy and to learn from Roddy. He's not only a great coach, but just an unbelievable human being that's second to none. So feel very, very fortunate to have played for him.
You're in a 2-0 with Kaner. Who's shooting?
So, I mean, one of the first things he said to me was, hey, I'm going to need you to shoot more this year. Because I think he knows that I'm more of a pass-first guy, too. And he said, you got to start shooting the puck more. And I'm like, listen, man, I haven't told him this yet, but my dad has been all over me since I was a little kid. Dad played a long time in the NHL, and he's got close friends that are Hall of Famers like Matt Sundin and Mario Lemieux, even Wayne Gretzky, that have literally told me via text or phone call or in person, whatever it is, Max, shoot the puck. Like, joke's over, shoot the puck. And it's my dad telling him to tell me that. And it just hasn't really sunk in. But Kaner was my favorite player growing up. And when he told me to shoot, it just hit different. he's obviously going to be a Hall of Famer, but Wayne Gretzky and Mario Lemieux wasn't enough, but Patrick Kane is. So we'll see how that transitions this year.
Seriously. Wayne Gretzky sends a text.
It was more of a call. But yeah, I know. Wayne has been all over me to shoot more. And so, same with Mario. Mario's the best. I'm very, very close with Mario. So for him to say that was hilarious. But no, I'm looking forward to this year. I'll be shooting the puck.
Did you tell Kaner that he was your favorite player?
Yeah. Actually, at the media tour like 5-6 years ago when I was in New York, that was the first time I met him. And we got an Uber on the way back from the U.S. Open. We were watching Federer play, actually, against Del Potro, I think it was. And Kaner was there.
Do you remember the match score?
No, I don't. Sorry.
You remember everything else?
No, not the score. But, so I was with my pops, and we met up with our agent at the time, and we got in an Uber with Kaner. And I was, like, just trying to be, like, shy, whatever. Like, quiet young kid. And I'd played against him already. So I was just trying to, like, oh, hey, how are you? Like, nice to meet you, whatever. We're talking about some guys that we traded for from Chicago and so on. Playing it cool. And then my dad goes, yeah, he had your jersey hanging up in his house, like his whole childhood. And your jersey hanging up in his room, basically. Just threw me under the bus completely. And Kaner just started dying laughing. So he's known for a while that I've been a big fan of him. But, no, I'm starting to get to know him now. And he's a great dude. And I'm just so pumped to play with him.
What number are you going to get?
13.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's different?
No, so I've always
different than 16, because yeah, I think of you as 16.
I started 16 in Arizona, went to 13 when I got to Montreal, because Henri Richard.
That's a tough one to get.
Yeah, he can't get that. He can keep it. So I went to 13, because that was the only other number I wore, because of Matt Sundin, who's like an uncle to me. And when I switched from Montreal to Columbus, Cam Atkinson was wearing 13, so I went back to 16. Then I got traded from Columbus to Carolina and got 13. And then signed in Chicago, and Jujhar Tara had 16, so staying with 13. I'm just really just crossing off all the teams on the list. We're at like 5 now, so.
Do you keep your jerseys?
Yes, I do.
What do you do with them?
I'd like to hope that eventually, some point, I'll like have a house with like some sort of like basement with like a pool table or something with just jerseys around.
Yeah,
I don't know if I ever have kids. Like, hey, dad played for that team. I don't know. We'll see. Thinking ahead, but we'll see. I'm not sure. I'd like to hang on to him just in case.
What the story about 16 though?
Yes,
is something that's always stuck with me. Can you Bobby tell Clark? Me? Can you tell us that story?
Yeah. So when I was 12 years old, I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, as you know. We've talked about that over and over again. But Bobby Clark, who is Philadelphia Flyers legend, captain of the team, Stanley Cup champion, on and on and on and on. Hall of Famer, obviously. He was a guy that I had known after just getting diagnosed. He also played in the NHL and had type 1. Didn't really know of anyone else that was doing it. And I had just transferred over from the Toronto Marlies and minor hockey to the Don Mills Flyers. So it kind of just was fitting that I switched from 13 at the time because of Matt's to 16 because of this Mr. Bobby Clark. And met him literally like 2 months into that season. And I'd met some pretty cool people along the line, but when I met him, my jaw just like dropped, hit the floor. And that was really, really special. So been fortunate enough to spend some time with Mr. Clark over the years. Sat down with him for an interview when I was in Philly one time in Montreal, and that was like, that's a highlight of my whole life, for sure. Just for him to do what he did in that era without the technology we have now, it just puts in perspective of how good I have it now with being a type 1 athlete, and definitely something I don't take for granted, and a guy that I've looked up to. So that's why I wear his number.
Let's have some fun. First goal.
LA Kings.
Yeah. Do you remember who you scored on?
Jonathan Quick.
That's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
What kind really of goal good. Was it?
Second period, Steve Downey pressured my buddy Jordan Wheel, actually, who I played with, and the puck just kind of popped out. I jumped over the boards in the second period, and I just ripped one high glove on Quickie. So, yeah, that was my first goal.
What was your celly like?
I was so happy. I mean, you watch that video. I mean, I smile a lot as it is, but, like, I don't even think you could see my face. It was just all smiling, so... it was cool to have my whole family there, too. That was special.
Who was the last goal that you scored on? Nobody ever knows this answer, by the way.
The latest goal?
Yeah.
Playoffs included?
Sure.
I scored against, the goalie's name in New York? Shesterkin? No, that's a good
one.
Igor? Yeah, scored on him in game 7, but the game was already over, so it doesn't really count. But before that, had two in game 7 against Boston.
When was the first time that you were benched?
My dad was my coach when I was a kid.
Your dad benched you?
He benched me a couple times. First time I ever got scratched, and the only time I've ever been scratched, was with John Tortorella. And it was because I took a bad penalty against my current teammate now, actually Connor Murphy. So that was really the only benching that I've had. But that's one I'll remember for sure.
I'd call your dad out, but he scares me. First car.
First car. This is actually kind of funny. I don't have a really cool story of like an old school car because I didn't get my license until I was like 18. I was a late bloomer.
Why?
Because I would live with Jared Knight, who was an older guy, and he just drove me when I was 16 in London because we lived together. So I was like, I don't need my license, and like didn't want to like go spend the week or whatever doing driver's class. Just assumed eventually it was just going to fall to the sky. Then realized, okay, you got to get your driver's license. So I did it, but did a deal with Audi, actually. So they gave me an Audi A5. So not a bad first car. Yeah.
Wow, I'm in thinking London. Toyota Corolla.
That's what I'm saying, man. That's what it should have been. But since I was a little older and played in London, I guess, they hooked me up. So.
When was the last time you danced?
I love to dance. Probably Darnell Nurse's wedding not too long ago. Or Oliver Bjorkstrand's wedding. One of those two.
You get right up there and groove it?
Depends on the time of night. We get there.
Potato digger,
yeah.
With a sprinkler. Like Kippy loves a sprinkler.
Yeah, no, I'm not big into the sprinkler or the potato digger, but I don't know. I can move a little bit, I guess.
First fight, NHL fight.
Peter Holland. He was in the Toronto Maple Leafs. I was in Arizona. It was at the Gila River Arena.
How'd you do?
It wasn't much of a fight. We both fell, but I think I won.
What was your first real good fight?
Ryan Kessler, the one I fought Ryan Kessler was pretty good.
Yeah.
I got a lucky shot in, but I'd say that one was pretty good.
What's your Mount Rushmore of cars? I need four.
Four, yeah. Ferrari 488. I'll throw a Lambo Aventador in there. Big G-Wagon fan, so you can throw a Brabus G-Wagon in there, and then Ford Raptor.
How many of those have you actually driven?
I drive a G-Wagon and a Ford Raptor right now. the Ferrari and the Lambo, no, I'm not there. I don't know if I'll ever get there. But
have you ever driven a Lambo?
I've never driven a Lambo, but I've driven a Ferrari. Yes.
Yeah?
Ferrari is just outstanding.
Didn't your dad have a Ferrari?
He did. He had two, actually. This guy's insane. But no, he had two red Ferraris, 360 Spider. I forget the other one. 430, maybe? Yeah.
Two?
Yeah. Both red, though.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Saw your name. I couldn't wait to catch up with you.
It's great seeing you, buddy.
Yeah, this is awesome. Really appreciate it. And awesome. Have fun in Chicago.
All right, brother. Great seeing you.
Ferraris, Ferraris, Ferraris. My first car, and I know it wasn't his first car because dad had the Ferraris with Max, but his first car was an Audi. Great car. My first car was a Toyota Tercel. They didn't even call it a Tercel. That's how long ago it was. And I blew out the engine coming back from playing in a senior hockey game in Kenora, Saskatchewan, and left liquid all over the highway in the middle of winter, which wasn't good. Let's get this thing back on the rails. So looking forward to season 3 of The Chirp with Darren Millard as we've caught up with all these players on the player media tour. Some of that still to come, and we're going to get into some more current conversation as we go along. But we want to hear from you. So tweet us, email us, send us your responses to the episode. So what you love, because if you love it, we'll do more of it. Didn't even mean to rhyme that, but we will. If you like this kind of style that we've done the first few episodes of this year, or we can change it and do a more long form conversation. It's up to you. And we are strictly at your beck and call on this. Like it, and let us know, and make sure, because that helps out on the rating scale as well. Next week, we got something special for you. I can't tip my hand just yet, but we got something really cool. And I'm trying to bring producer Bob out of a shell. If I can do that, the thing's just going to explode. Thanks for being with us on The Chirp with Darren Millard.